the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Friends and enemies, welcome to yet another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, all part of the CBP Media Network. Today, we're going to have a guest coming in from the other side of the world. It's the first time we're having somebody from the Philippines come in and talk to us. This is going to be very, very exciting. So before we go any further, just want to say that this show and this episode is sponsored by EasyDNS. It's a great place to buy or get any sort of web hosting services, DNS services, anything along those lines. They are a privacy-centric company. You can even pay with Bitcoin if you want to. So if you're looking for any of those services, check out EasyDNS. It's a great place to do it. And in fact, we are going to be opening up our very own website, the Canadian Bitcoiners Podcast, very, very soon. But without further ado, I'd like to bring in the guest of honor to the show, Ethan. Ethan, welcome aboard to the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure.
So Ethan Rose is the gentleman on the right of the screen. Ethan, tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe how you got into Bitcoin, because this story, it's going to be rather interesting, and I look forward to hearing it.
Yeah, right. Like, who's this guy on the other side of the world from where I was born, which is the U.S., Michigan, kind of close to Canada, I guess, and then lived in Seattle as well. Since the audience is probably mostly Canadian Bitcoiners, right? I feel like neighbors, in a way, have gone across the border to Canada quite a lot. But actually, living in the Philippines now, the way I got here was via marriage, I guess. Married a Filipina 7 years ago and spent a lot of time coming back, taking trips, like vacations back to the Philippines. Fell in love with the place, with the country. And also, since I was a software engineer in Seattle for a while, I was like technically inclined to help with the payments problems in the Philippines. And like the cost of sending remittances back home is kind of near and dear to my heart. So it just became a passion project at first, like creating a Bitcoin wallet that works in the Philippines so that I could still live off my Bitcoin and live life in the Philippines. And then it evolved. So a year and a half ago, started this, just hacking it together in my bedroom, basically, this Lightning wallet. But then a year ago, we got some outside funding and we got banking rails in the Philippines. It's evolved quite a bit just in the past year.
So when did you become a Bitcoiner? I would assume before the 1.5 years before you started the Bitcoin wallet.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's hear about your Bitcoin journey.
I was pretty late. I dismissed Bitcoin as like a fad or a Ponzi scheme for the first 10 years of Bitcoin's existence. I didn't hate Bitcoin, but it was just like, I heard about it through random people at the peaks usually of hype. So like 2017 to 2018, like the time it was when like the barber, you know, was talking about Bitcoin, or for me, it was like the real estate agent telling me I should buy Bitcoin. So I just like dismissed it right away. Like, okay, cool. Sounds like a Ponzi scheme. But then after, you know, the thing that triggered it for me was when governments in COVID, the start of COVID lockdowns, governments started stifling the economy in the name of public health, but basically shut down economies and replaced economic output with money printing. That was a pivotal moment in my mind where I realized, oh, money is actually fake. Government money is actually totally fake, and government shouldn't have the ability to destroy economies at their whim. And so that's when I mentally joined the Bitcoin standard and then just proceeded to put all my life savings in Bitcoin at that point.
And just curious, what sort of measures did they institute there for COVID in the Philippines? Because I'll be perfectly honest, it's not much news that comes out over this neck of the woods. So this is all rather new to me. So I'm curious, you have boots on the ground. What was it like during that time?
Yeah, the Philippines was pretty crazy. Actually, I wasn't able to come to the Philippines for quite a while. I'm like proudly unvaccinated. So for a year plus was not able to even come to the Philippines. They had, then when we were able to come back, we had to stay in a quarantine hotel for a while, for like 2 weeks before they let you go out into the public. And then even entering the mall or any store, really any place of business, you had to present a vaccine card in order to even enter. So there's a lot that if you're not vaccinated, you're pretty much forced to get vaccinated, against their own will. Like they didn't really want an injection, but in order to have a job, you know, you had to get it. And then there's like kind of funny things like in the Philippines, face shields were very common. I think the government really experimented with forcing face shields plus masks. So like in the airport, you had to put your mask on plus a face shield over top of it, plastic shield. Yeah. So it looked kind of funny too. It's very safe, I guess, from people breathing on you.
I know that they have a heavy-handed government. I don't know if it's a prime minister or the president that's leading the country, but I know that he's very unique in his approach. And I would imagine he would be doing those heavy-handed approaches with respect to restrictions if indeed he bought into everything. It sounds like he did. Well, or guess what could you do? It is what it is. I want to talk a little bit about remittances. Now, that's something that really you mentioned that it's kind of led you down to this journey towards Bitcoin. Primarily, I guess it's Western Union or country, companies along those lines that are the transit for having money sent over to the Philippines, and they're taking a massive haircut. What's people's view on those companies? Did they just say it's just part and parcel of the whole process, or were they actively looking for some other alternative to maybe get more money in the whole process of remittances?
It really depends on the person. So I've seen like once somebody finds the way to send money home, they stick with it. They're quite loyal just because they've already learned how to do it and they don't want to learn something new. That's very common for humans, I think, anyways. So once they're set up, they have an account in Western Union, they know their password and everything, like they don't want to bother to spend the effort to save a little bit of money. Even though like everybody does want to save money, but most people don't want to like make the effort unless we catch them and onboard them when like the very first time that they're learning how to send money from anywhere in the world or the Philippines, then that's the ideal time to teach somebody something new, like using Bitcoin to do it because it's actually cheaper.
That's an aha moment once somebody could figure this out, especially if they can understand the speed at which the money is transferred or the Bitcoin is transferred. It's really an eye-opening experience for people. Now, before we get into the Bitcoin Island project, I want to talk a little bit about Pouch. I believe that's the name of the wallet.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about this. Is this strictly just Lightning, or is there on-chain capabilities in the Pouch wallet? Because I'll be honest, I haven't heard of this before, but it's something that is used primarily in the Philippines. So Shillit, talk about it. I want to hear a lot about it. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's up here, the Pouch PH app in my phone. It's a Philippine peso wallet only. The balances are Philippine pesos only. We're not licensed to custody Bitcoin. And frankly, like I'd be happy to advise people like self-custody your own Bitcoin anyway. So we have Bitcoiners in the Philippines who basically prefer to self-custody anyway. So not a big feature loss to not have Bitcoin balances. Of course, we find like many people just don't know anything about Bitcoin and want to learn and want to try buying their first Bitcoin. and we don't have an easy way to onboard them other than tell them like, oh, download another wallet, which is kind of a barrier. So we do want to get better at that, like onboarding new Bitcoiners and educating. But we're focused on the utility. It's a double-edged sword because if we add Bitcoin balances, it actually has a potential to scare away other potential users, like especially business owners. Because when we onboard business owners and say, hey, we can do payment processing, it's more efficient for foreigners who come and bring their own e-wallet, maybe the Bitcoin wallet or the Strike app from the US, for example, and they can just make QR payments pretty seamlessly. So it's an easier sell to businesses when we don't charge them any fees. They get exactly the amount of Philippine pesos that we asked for. And then our business is just adding around a 1% exchange rate spread to the payer. And Bitcoiners are happy to pay. Like myself, I'm happy to pay as well, 1% to pay with Lightning, because my alternative would have been like foreign exchange fees on a credit card. Most places in the Philippines don't accept credit card, by the way. So you're pretty much stuck with cash. And that's even higher fees to go to an ATM or a money changer to get cash. So yeah, 1% to pay with Bitcoin sounds pretty good.
So there's no alternative.
Yeah,
really?
So it's just Philippine
cash or nothing.
It's cash or what's been taking the digital payment space in the Philippines, rather than credit cards, because credit cards have very low, I would say under 10% even adoption with merchants. Even so, you go to a restaurant and try to pay with a credit card. Most restaurants, even nice restaurants, don't accept credit cards.
Wow.
So yeah, you're kind of stuck with cash, or so what's been picking up lately is e-wallets. GCash is the biggest in the Philippines. And GCash is a pretty traditional, like Venmo style or fiat only e-wallet, but people QR pay using
so
GCash.
The way I understand it, Pouch has the ability to process Philippine peso payments over the Lightning Network. Is that correct? And if so,
yeah,
the technical challenges in order to implement this, can you basically give us the rundown for this? Because I wouldn't even know how to begin with this. I'd love to hear if you could probably give us an idea. What was it like to institute this on your Pouch wallet?
Yeah, so we run a Lightning node and we have channels with other Bitcoin channels, right, with other Lightning nodes on the network. The way we involve Philippine pesos is basically we have a banking partner in the Philippines. We have access to their API. We have an exchange partner in the Philippines and access to their API. So we use our exchange partner to convert. We receive Bitcoin or send out Bitcoin, either way, using our Lightning node. So that's how we interact with the world, is via our Lightning infrastructure with Bitcoin. But then for our local users, we basically have the exchange in the middle doing conversion from Bitcoin to Philippine pesos. And the way we do it is actually we don't in real time convert pesos to Bitcoin or Bitcoin to pesos. We actually batch it. So a daily kind of batch. We have our own liquidity in the exchange. And it's a little bit more efficient because exchanges that have Philippine peso trading pairs are very limited, less competition, much higher fees, because these exchanges have to be licensed in the Philippines. So there's only two, CoinsPH and PDEX. And those are the only options that have Philippine pesos. So like, yeah, we have to pay higher fees to actually do the conversion. So we prefer to batch it and save on those fees. Because again, some Bitcoin goes out. So we offset it as much as we can and then only trade on the exchange the difference to replenish our own peso liquidity with the banking partner.
Nothing like dealing with an oligopoly, because that is the best way to deal earn your stripes when running a business. Now, I guess I have one last question with respect to Pouch. Are there any other services that you're currently offering through that, and also anything that's going to be rolling out in not too distant future, perhaps Zaps through Noster? I'm curious to hear if there's anything that's going to be unveiled in the next little while.
Yeah, so first off, Noster is really cool. We're looking at supporting Noster. Probably I mean, there's just so much to build, right? So many amazing things to build, the things our users are requesting. Noster itself is amazing. So that was probably like Q2 or Q3 before we start building Noster features. But we're definitely looking forward to doing that. So the features that we support now is mainly two use cases. There's the remittance use case. There was like last month we added support for send globally, Coin Corner and Strike, two wallets. Coin Corner is in the UK and Europe. Strike is in the US. They have the ability to send directly to a bank account. So I can, because I have a US account with Strike, so I can like demo this one. If I tap pay, we've got send globally here. This is a new option in Strike. They've partnered with Bitnob in West Africa and then Pouch in the Philippines. So you can actually just select the country, you enter a phone number and then choose, or bank account number as well. So you can send to any like mobile money account or bank account in the Philippines directly without even having to go through Pouch. It makes it much easier for recipients who say already had a bank account in the Philippines, but they don't want to sign up for Pouch. Like, that's fine. Now you can actually send a remittance from Strike or Coin Corner.
It makes it so much easier.
That's inside. And then the other feature is, the other use case is payment processing, really, for businesses. And like I said, we don't charge any fees. We have 250 merchants in Boracay accepting Bitcoin. So Boracay Island here in the Philippines is a tourist destination. That's why businesses are actually more receptive to serving. Basically, if you own a business here, you know that your clientele are foreign tourists, basically. So you're very receptive to accommodating foreign tourists and accepting other payment options. So that's why we found it actually quite easy to, and business owners locally, very receptive to accepting Bitcoin. That's sweet. And we've been able to attract like travel vlogger Bitcoiners from around the world. Some are even relocating or temporarily living here, doing like digital nomading. It's pretty sweet to see the island itself kind of develop into a Bitcoin hub.
So Boracay Island, or that's known as the Bitcoin Island from what I understand. How far away is this from Manila? Because I'm sure people would primarily land in Manila. So what's the journey like to get over to Boracay Island?
Yeah, so it's like physically pretty close to Manila, but it's a little more, it's not as straightforward to get here. So usually you take a flight from Manila to Cataclan. Cataclan is the town on the mainland. Mainland being like much bigger island than Boracay is a small island. So then on the mainland, you land at the airport and you take a little ferry across to Boracay Island. Yeah, and Boracay is just a few kilometers across. So it's not tiny, tiny, but it's small enough to, maybe a 1 hour walk from top to bottom, or 1 to 2 hour walk from top to bottom, and only a 10-minute walk across. This is a very thin island. So, yeah.
And what's the vibe over there right now? Because from what I understand, you're trying to have a circular Bitcoin economy that's going to be instituted there. Tell me what is going on over there. Right? Businesses, are they adopting this? Are they accepting this with open arms? Is this something that's just people are very happy about? Go ahead. I'm curious to hear what's going on over there at this Bitcoin Island.
Yeah. So actually, circular economy is something that we're interested in, but not focused entirely on. And the reason is so that it's basically easier to onboard more and more people. If like business owners, it's not really circular if they're just accepting Bitcoin payments and receiving pesos and then cashing it out to their bank account right after. But we're not forcing them to keep it in Bitcoin and also buy their things in Bitcoin, because we're aware that would be a much harder sell. So the circular economy, we're trying to get people circulating in little pieces at a time, like we're forcing people to do it. So for example, we have a few businesses that we've have built better relationships with. Like, we're always over time. People are learning like Bitcoin is actually a good thing. And people, as they use Pouch more, accept Bitcoin more, even business owners get more receptive over time to trying new things. So like doing payroll via the Pouch app is something, and even via Bitcoin, and even some of the employees receiving their payroll are buying Bitcoin then and self-custodying it. These are neat side effects, but not the main focus. It's the long-term goal though, right? We'd like to have the entire country on a Bitcoin standard, but we're taking the baby steps.
That's the goal. And now if people are keeping the, or some of the Bitcoin that they receive or even purchase themselves, they are actually putting that into cold storage. From what I understand, in a lot of developing nations, they don't tend to hold on to Bitcoin. They just immediately convert it into the local currency or US dollar, because it's just, it's more cost effective to transact in that rather than hold on to Bitcoin, which could potentially be very volatile in price. And, you know, you're less likely to withstand massive swings in price with Bitcoin. So I assume then what you mentioned, that there are some people that are holding on to Bitcoin in cold storage. Is that very bullish to me, if that's correct?
Yeah. So cold storage is, there are Bitcoiners in the Philippines, like maximalists. There's a few, there's not that many, but they do cold storage. And then there's others that cold storage, maybe that's too much of a technical hurdle, but self-custody. I mean, if you have a hot wallet, but it's self-custodial, like for example, Blue Wallet or something like that, then that's interim stuff. That's a little like that. That's one that basically people come to us and ask, like, how do I buy Bitcoin? Because I want to invest in Bitcoin. These are, I mean, most people don't really know anything about Bitcoin other than that it's had high returns, or, you know, maybe they hear on YouTube scammers or whatever, like talking about, or altcoiners, right? Talking about the price and trading and things like that. So that piques people's interest. Everybody's interested in making money, right? So we kind of take the opportunity, like their interest has been piqued. Now we can take the opportunity to present the actual value of Bitcoin, why we Bitcoin, beyond just number go up technology. And then people will actually, and some are self-onboarding, but like I mentioned earlier, this is something we actually need to automate better, the education. So like build into the app better education so people don't have to just show up. Many people will just knock on our door. We're here in a little office in the center of Boracay with a big Bitcoin on top. So people just drop in actually and ask questions about Bitcoin, which is really neat. We can basically be an education center here as well. People are very interested, but self-custody is via hot wallets or something people do can do more easily than cold storage for sure. But like you said, here in the Philippines, in developing countries, I'm sure anywhere, but especially here in the Philippines, people live very hand to mouth. So like you get paid, and by the end of the day, you've bought your things, your food, your daily like household supplies, like whatever, and your money is gone by the end of the day. People do realize though that they want to save and they don't know how. So people are really like, if we just mentioned we have a Bitcoin wallet, people instantly go to like, oh, how do I buy Bitcoin? I want to try. Which is
that's neat. Awesome, so that you're keeping your interest just by chatting about that. And Romel is asking a couple, one question. He broke it up in a couple of comments. He's asking about the uptake of Bitcoin in the Philippines after the Axie meltdown, because he also mentioned that people over there were playing Axie Infinity as full-time jobs for other people in the West, from what he believes. So maybe you could shed a light on this, because obviously neither Romel or myself have a clue about this. So the floor is yours.
Yeah, so Axie Infinity was like this play-to-earn game. It was based on having characters, I guess, axes. I didn't play it, so I might get the terminology wrong. But there's a high, they're scarce, basically. Like they breed and they multiply as basically a way to increase the supply, but they're scarce. So in order to even get started playing the game, especially near the end, near the crash, like these axes were hundreds of dollars. Like even to get started in the game, you had to pay hundreds of dollars to buy the characters to get started. So that's why people were playing for other people in the West, right? Because you didn't have the money yourself to get started playing the game, but maybe if somebody else owned the characters, then you could play on their behalf. So the thing that happened, my understanding was there was like a hack or something with the underlying token, or the network was called Ronin Network, something like that. So I wasn't that familiar with it. And even so, like, yeah, of course people stopped playing it and kind of felt like they got scammed or rug pulled. But at the same time, people are still really interested in Web3, NFTs, crypto space in the Philippines. And to me, that's, gaming. I think gaming really interests a lot of people. So that's actually something, I want to talk about it a little bit, like a way gaming can get people into Bitcoin. But that's, I would say, hasn't slowed down from my perspective, like people's interest in gaming, even despite the Axie rug pull. Everybody's like, okay, what's next? What's the next game to play and earn from?
Is there currently something out there right now to attract users into Bitcoin, like some sort of gaming app or anything along those lines that is popular amongst people in the Philippines? I'd love to hear
from you. Did you mention Zebedee as your sponsor? I was like a little choppy in the beginning. Did you have a different
sponsor? EasyDNS.
Okay, yeah, I was a little choppy. I didn't catch the sponsor's name. Cool. So extra shout out for the sponsor there. But yeah. Then Zebedee is a wallet, or I mean, they're kind of a wallet, but they're a gaming platform, Lightning platform. They have several games, even competitive games, so like CSGO, Play and Earn Bitcoin. So this is picking up organically in the Philippines quite a lot. Reached out to us actually looking to do more like directly partner in the Philippines so that we can reach a much broader audience. So Zebedee is Bitcoin only. They're again a Lightning company, so people can play the games, play like competitive tournaments, like very competitive gaming, earn Bitcoin and then cash it out to Pouch. Where basically cashing out to Pouch means selling your Bitcoin for local currency that you can use more places. And then Thunder Games,
yes,
is mobile gaming, like casual, more casual mobile games. They have several, Bitcoin Bay, like a bubble shooter, or Bitcoin Snake, like the classic Snake game. You can play those and earn Bitcoin as well. And those, that one is surprisingly really, really getting popular. So users are like, people are just self-onboarding to play to earn their mobile games. And then the only way out really into the local economy, like, yeah, they could use their own Bitcoin self-custody, but most people are preferring to cash out to Pouch and get their Philippine pesos. It's really small amounts. The goal for that is, I mean, you play the game, you earn maybe a few sats, which translates in the Philippines to a few centavos, a few cents. Like very tiny amounts, but after maybe 5 or 10 cash outs or maybe 2 weeks, you might have enough pesos, Philippine pesos, to buy mobile data. This is in the Philippines, this is much more common. Rather than paying for a monthly phone plan, you just pay as you go. And we have like built into the Pouch app, this is a important e-wallet feature. Like our other e-wallet, GCash, the big e-wallet in the Philippines, has this like load and promos feature. So you can pay 10 pesos and buy like however much it is, maybe 200 megabytes of mobile data for your phone. So that's a goal that we encourage people, like if you're playing Thunder Games, like keep going, keep playing, and eventually after a couple weeks, people hit this 10 peso amount, the minimum to buy some mobile data for your phone.
So are you able to move anything directly from Pouch to GCash? Is there a mechanism to do so?
Yep, we have bank transfers. So with our banking partner, we use InstaPay. InstaPay is basically ACH, or it's like the interbank payment network in the Philippines. it's instant and available 24/7, but only up to around $1,000. So InstaPay, it connects us with all the banks in the Philippines, including all the e-wallets as well. They all use the InstaPay network. So yeah, we can send out and other people can send in to Pouch. It feels a lot like a bank account in that way, actually.
So then it makes a lot of sense for vendors on Bitcoin Island to accept Bitcoin, because ultimately then if they're going to start using, or they will be using GCash in the end for their purchases, their daily purchases, they're able to then convert the Bitcoin that they collect, use Pouch, move it over to GCash, and from there transact for their daily purchases. So I guess through that whole endeavor, it must not be that hard to get vendors to buy in to the whole Bitcoin model. So what's the percentage of businesses that you would say that have already adopted Bitcoin within the Bitcoin Island?
So we estimated there are roughly 3,000 businesses here. It could be way off. It's an educated guess. We haven't like gone through and counted exactly, but 250 accepting Bitcoin puts us at around 10%, roughly. Maybe to be safe, like 5 to 10%. So you can definitely walk around and see Bitcoin signs everywhere, but you can see them around, right? You just walk down a street and you see a Bitcoin sign somewhere, but it's not everywhere. It's not every single business.
And where were you 6 months ago? Was the number close to zero?
Yep. Yeah. 6 months ago, I think it's 7 or 8 months ago by now that where we actually got started from zero, from scratch. So pretty good. Yeah. So far.
Yeah. You have to pat yourself on the back, because let's be honest, this is still a bear market with Bitcoin. But not only that, globally, there's been a slowdown with economies everywhere. So it's probably harder to onboard people and have people transition into that, given the environment. So that, I think that's a rather bullish sign from you. What's the next step with Bitcoin Island? What are your plans moving forward?
So we have the retreat, the Bitcoin Island retreat. I want to encourage all your listeners to come take a trip to Boracay. It's actually coming up pretty quickly now. It's 3 weeks away. Even less than 3 weeks away. So yeah, we have lineup a couple dozen speakers from around the world and from within the Philippines in the Bitcoin space. The ones around the world are in like the Bitcoin Lightning space. It could be investors, founders, builders in the space. And the attendees locally in the Philippines are more like in the fintech space, but not particularly Bitcoin, but they're interested in Bitcoin. So I think it's a great opportunity for the broader Bitcoin global community to represent Bitcoin to the local fintech leaders in the Philippines. And for the fintech leaders in the Philippines, great opportunity to learn more about Bitcoin. And then overall, since Boracay is a tourist destination, it's a beautiful tropical island to take a relaxing vacation. Like, maybe just don't even come to the conference, just chill on the beach and spend some sats somewhere to support the local businesses.
Best time of year to go? What would you say it is?
Now is a pretty good time. Personally, I would say any time is good, but there is the rainy season, which is when the typhoons hit. I think December is usually, just from anecdotally the past few years that I've been here, it seems like a typhoon always hits in December. But that might not be the official rainy season. So check when the rainy season is. Like probably the better time to avoid, like, I don't know, you wouldn't want your flight to try to land in a typhoon. I would not be into that. But and then typhoons, things flood here in the Philippines all the time. So best to avoid the flooding where like the roads don't work anymore. And on the other hand, it's kind of fun, like seeing the wind in the rain. So if you're into storms, then maybe that's a good time to come. But yeah, in general, I think this time, March, starting March and for the next couple of months, it's peak tourist season. So it's more crowded here. So that's both a good thing and a bad thing. Like maybe the weather is best, but that means also there's more crowds. Crowds, it's not like, not like Disneyland or something where you have to wait hours in line to do anything when it's crowded here. It's just like there's still plenty of quiet beaches as well that you can go out like up north to Puka Beach. That's a really quiet beach. It's not in the middle of everything. So that one is a more popular place to kick back and relax. So yeah, even when it's peak tourist season, they're still seating at the restaurants and everything. So no problem.
So for those who are unaware, when it rains over there, it rains. You lived in Seattle. It's known as a rainy city, but it pales in comparison to the amount of rain that comes into the Philippines, because I've spoken to many people who live there in the past, and they told me, man, when it rains over there, you have no idea what it's like. So yeah, if you could avoid the rainy season, definitely do so. In terms of the people that's being attracted to come over there, what countries are you primarily drawing from?
We have everywhere. We've seen from pretty much everywhere in the world. Like last couple of days, we had a tourist from Sweden drop by the office because the ATM machine ate their debit card. So they were kind of stuck with no way to get money, but they had Bitcoin and Binance. So we helped them sign up for Pouch and get their Bitcoin out of Binance via on-chain deposit to Pouch. So then they had pesos again and they could spend it places. They could cash out. Because not only do we have banking rails in the Philippines, we also have cash out centers. So you can actually go over the counter and pick up physical cash, which is a nice kind of necessary feature for the Philippine economy. So that's like, yeah, some tourists from Sweden dropped by. We have quite a few from the United States. And then we had around a month ago, a travel vlogger from the Netherlands came, and he actually made a vlog for the Netherlands audience, for his Bitcoin audience there. So various countries around Europe, like, yeah, everywhere. Yeah, we have a Australian on the island right now. We don't know everybody who comes. We can see in our merchants like accepting Bitcoin payments from people we have no idea who they are, which is awesome. But when people do drop by the office to say hi, we always appreciate it too, because it's fun getting to meet people and sharing kind of the journey, talking about Bitcoin and we don't know everyone, but we know quite a few. And I would say so far it's been maybe on average a tourist a day dropping in the office.
Are you offering tours to these people coming into the office?
So sometimes, like, I mean, I always have video calls randomly. It's hard to predict like when I have a lot of meetings, but if people drop in and I am not in a meeting, I like to go walk with them to the nearby businesses around the corner, show them, like, you can pay with, go to the bar, buy your drinks with Bitcoin, go to the restaurant here, go to the Sari Sari store. Sari Sari is like the local convenience shops, like usually out of people's houses. You can buy like water, Coke, household supplies, whatever, like in like tiny bite-sized pieces. So we have quite a few Sari Sari stores even. This is great for the local economy as well, to get adopting, because that's kind of like part of daily life, not specifically touristy things.
How's your Tagalog? I was dying to ask you from the beginning.
My Tagalog is not that good. I am good at greetings and things, but my wife is actually Bisaya so there's many languages in the Philippines. Tagalog is the official language. It's called Filipino, like the capital of the Philippines, Manila, is a Tagalog place. But if you go outside of Manila to central or southern Philippines, Bisaya is the most common language in those regions. So the second most common language in the Philippines. So I'm much better at Bisaya than Tagalog. Still, here in Boracay, there's yet another language called Aklanon, and it's got some similar words, but otherwise completely different. So it's hard to keep everything straight. And it's weird here because there's tourists from like the Visayas region, the Manila region, and from internationally as well. So what we end up with is a mix of a whole bunch of different languages and people trying to communicate with each other. But I mean, it's pretty chill. Like even amongst Filipinos, you would think that everybody would understand each other because they're all Filipinos, but nope. There's language barriers even within Filipinos talking to Filipinos here.
English is taught in school over there, is it not? Because yep. Everybody I talk to that come from the Philippines speaks English. It seems like a second language, but they're fluent in it. So I'm assuming they're getting yep. formal training with it. So I guess that's what's spoken just about anywhere for a tourist that comes over to the Philippines.
Yep. English is very, very prevalent. Filipinos are very good at English. So study in school, right? And even English. So like, as I mentioned, like there's language barriers within the Philippines. Sometimes people even fall back to English or Taglish, Tagalog in English. Like, English is good here.
That is so cool. So just before we wrap things up, Ethan, just want to give you a shout out for the Pouch app. If you are in the Philippines and you're not using it, please check it out. But just want to hand it off to you. If there's anything else you want to just mention before we sign off over here, the floor is yours. Where could people reach you and the whole nine yards? You could run with it now. The ball's going to be handed off to you.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. So the only thing is one final shout out to come to Bitcoin Island, come to Boracay, Philippines. We'll be happy to accommodate you and meet you here.
And where can people find you if they want to reach you?
The pouch.ph website, literally just pouch.ph in the address bar, we have like a live chat. You can anonymously chat. Feel like the Facebook module and the website. That's a good, like, really easy way to reach us 24/7. And then Twitter at BTC Retreat is the kind of island/conference retreat official Twitter handle. So those are the best places to reach.
I guess I just got one final question from the audience from I was asking. What's your karaoke song? I don't know what the reference is for this, but is there an answer to the question?
Oh, yeah. The karaoke is huge in the Philippines. It's kind of funny because when you dine at a restaurant here, you're used to, like, I don't know. I'm used to, like, the songs, the music matching the theme of the restaurant. So if you, like, go to a Spanish restaurant or something, maybe a Latin American restaurant, then you have, like, Latin American music. But nope, in the Philippines, it's really often like karaoke love songs or old school 90s or 80s karaoke songs. Very, very common in the Philippines. So also part of daily life. I mean, it's kind of like you're home from work and you just chill and sing karaoke for hours into the night. You can hear your neighbors singing karaoke as well pretty much every day. So my karaoke song, I'll have to go with Harana, which is a Tagalog love song. A Harana is like the courting of a girl, like with singing, like play a guitar and sing, like this one is one of the only Tagalog songs that I know how to sing, but usually it's well received. People appreciate that I can at least, maybe I don't speak Tagalog too well, but I've learned at least how to sing one song in Tagalog.
So if you're looking for some good food, good people, good weather, Bitcoin economy, and some karaoke, you're going to get it all on Bitcoin Island. Check it out. And if you're going there, reach out to Ethan Rose. Maybe he'll give you a tour of the island while you get there. So Ethan, thank you very much for coming on the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. And for everybody that's tuned in and listening in on the audio, until then, we'll be chatting on Monday. So take care, everyone, and PV. It's just